feline friends, welcome to Catitude. I'm your show host, Michelle Fern. Today, we have an author with us who has written the most amazing book about a very special cat and his journey to bring the cat home with him. It's an incredible book. Stay tuned. I don't want you to miss this. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I would like to welcome Brad Beyer. He is the author of Salopi, A True Story of Love and Resilience. Welcome, Brad.
Thank you, Michelle. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
It's my honor to have you on my show. Thank you for your service to this country.
Thank you.
I appreciate that so much. And as do, I'm sure, all of my listeners. So this is a really unique book. I've never read anything quite like this because it talks about your life in the service, but also when you rescued this kitten in another country and your journey back. But there's a lot of backstory. What motivated you to write Salopi?
Well, I owe it to my wonderful and beautiful wife. It was a couple years ago. We were actually cleaning out our basement after Christmas. It usually gives you that time of the year where you want to thin things out. And I remember going through our storage rooms and trying to empty some totes and make some spaces in our home. And I stumbled across a box of my old memories, and I popped the box open, and inside I found some of my Army memorabilia, a hat from the Army and some medals. And one of those things I found was a picture, and the picture was of a little black and white kitten laying on a footlocker among the Stars and Stripes newspaper. And I held it up for my wife to see, and she looked, and just as only wives can do, she went, "Aw, you know what? You really need to sit down and write her story. The country could use a story like hers right about now." So I sat down and I just started writing about how I found this kitten. This kitten stumbled into my life and in many ways changed my life, and I changed her life.
It's a great story. I'm trying to go to the picture that I have.
That was the picture I held up for her to see at that point.
Beautiful tuxedo. Would you call her tuxedo? I think black and white.
Yeah, I would. It was, she had the most beautiful coloring. It was, what was beautiful about her is the white that went up her nose and then was kind of complemented by her little pink nose at the end. So it really kind of gave her an inquisitive look.
Molly is the black and white, and she has a mustache, so she looks half French. It's only halfway.
It's amazing. It's amazing what God does with coloring for our animals.
Yep, and her nose, Molly's nose is black, so It's very amazing the things that happen. So let's talk about your background. So you had an interesting background. You went into the service, and it seemed like from what I read, it was kind of, well, I don't know if I'm going to do this or that. Let me go here. So what made you decide to go into the service?
Well, I grew up in a city just outside of Philadelphia called Norristown. It's a city of about 35,000 people. Blue collar town, just good salt of the earth people. And both of my parents grew up poor. They met each other. Not surprisingly, they struggled with money for a good period of their life. And when I was a teenager, they went through a devastating bankruptcy, and parents pulled my younger brother and I aside and said, "Hey, listen, we have no money left." And that was kind of devastating to hear. I always knew my parents would take care of me, but certainly devastating to hear, "Hey, we have no money left, but we'll always love you." And at that point, as a teenager, I kind of made the decision that I was never going to struggle like my parents did. But at that point, I had no idea how I was going to do that. And coming from a blue-collar town, especially in the late 80s, at least where I was, a lot of kids didn't go to college. I was one of five children. At that point, none of my siblings had ever gone to a four-year university. Most of the parents in our town didn't go to universities and things like that. So there was no college tours. And I knew I didn't want to go to any more schooling at that point. Actually, I was quite terrified of the thought of going to college. So I decided, hey, I wanted to serve my country. I had a great deal of patriotism then. I do now. So I said, hey, I came home from school one day and I told my parents, hey, I'm joining the Army. And that started it. And I ended up about 8 months after that, I was enlisted and sent to Fort Benning, Georgia, which is the home of the U.S. Army Infantry. And that started my career. I went in thinking, well, I'll just retire from the military. I come to realize it wasn't necessarily a good fit for me, but that's how I decided to go. It was really just that sense of patriotism and knowing I wanted to serve and definitely didn't want to go to college.
Okay, so not what I said earlier, but it's interesting. College terrified you, yet serving your country and all that entailed did not.
Yeah, you have to wonder about the intelligence of somebody, right? You find the U.S. Army a lot less scary than college, but yes, that's the way it started for me.
I think you need a lot more chutzpah, I don't know, guts to just say, I'm going to serve my country rather. College, to me, that's a lot easier.
You would think, but to me, I chose the military first, so.
Well, thank you again for your service. I might keep saying that, do there, but I really do respect all the people that serve our country. I don't think they get enough appreciation at times, so.
Well, we have that in common, I agree.
In the book, you give a good background of what it's actually like to be in the Army. And, you know, most of us civilians only know it by, you know, what's in TV, what's in movies. Maybe some of us have read other military books, but you really talk about it in detail. What was your purpose in doing this to set up what happened later in the book?
Well, I kind of think not only did it talk about service and what my journey was to finding Salopi, but I think it kind of explained how I got there. And what I realized going in the military, it's a hard life, especially going through infantry school and things like that, where your whole job is really learn to how to kill other people and to break their equipment. And that's really what it comes down to. And as I was going through this, there was times I'd question myself and my faith, like, would God be okay if I had to bayonet another human being? And through all of that, you realized, A, how much you miss home, B, how much you care about the people that you serve with. But at the same time, you also realize that you can become very self-focused and really focused just on yourself and how miserable you are and how homesick you are. And it wasn't really until I found Salopi that she helped to bring that maturity out in me that, hey, the world is bigger than just you and your own problems. And you have to learn to care about others as much as you do yourself. And in this case, a little tiny kitten that I found out in the desert.
I'm going to ask you about that. How did you find her? So out in the desert, I mean, a little kitten surviving in the desert?
It was just after the time when I went in. It was just at the end of the Cold War. So I was stationed in Berlin, Germany, which was an interesting time to be there because a couple months before I got there, the Berlin Wall just began to fall. But right at that time, we went into Operation Desert Shield that Saddam Hussein invaded Iraq, and luckily that war went relatively quickly. But my unit, being that I was in Berlin, we didn't take part in that. But immediately after, we had what we called Operation Provide Comfort. And if you can recall back then, a lot of the Kurdish refugees were fleeing Iraq, northern Iraq. And what our unit was supposed to do is to help rescue those Kurdish refugees, help to provide them safe transport into Turkey. So that was what my unit was there for, along with a number of other countries that formed the Operation Provide Comfort Coalition. And it was one day we were out in, so Salopi, to give you an idea, is about a mile north of Iraq and about 2 miles from Syria. So it is right there, really in the middle of the desert. And it's about 125 degrees every day, just beating heat, very dry. But we had a giant tent set up. That's where we had our chow hall. And I went in one day and I sat down and there's picnic tables within the tent. And because it was so crowded that particular day, I threw my hat on the floor next to my feet. And as we're sitting there eating the meal, I just hear this little chirping that's just kind of beep, beep, beep. I'm looking around. Nobody else seemed to hear it. And I look down and inside my hat curled up is this little black and white kitten. And I looked at it and I said, guys, there's a cat in my hat. So upon hearing that, I kind of realized, hey, Dr. Seuss may have written the book, but I lived the story, you know. So I had this little black and white kitten in my hat, and I picked her up, and we all just sat there looking at it, and she's looking back at us, probably thinking, you know, what are these alien creatures staring at me? And somebody came up with the idea at that point of, hey, let's take her back to our tent, and we'll make her a pet. And that's kind of where our journey with Salopi started.
Wow. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your cat tree tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Brad Beyer. He is the author of Salopi, A Story of Love and Resilience. So, we're at the point, so you just found Salopi. You decided to make her a pet. Do you think that Salopi provided some support to you while you were there? And I know you said the, you know, Army makes you very self-focused. So besides that, do you think she provided other support other than, you know, caring for something else and I guess the love that comes with that?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I would say, I don't think necessarily the Army makes you self-focused, but being a 19-year-old, 20-year-old young man who's miserable and just wants to get home, you know, I think the age and the homesickness tend to make me a little more self-focused. And finding her, our unit, and when I say our unit, there was probably about 15, 20 people in our tent. And she kind of became our little mascot. And what was interesting about her is here I am. It was a unit at that time. There were next to no women in this deployment. So it was a bunch of us dusty, dirty, smelly men. And in all of this dry, arid earth and dirt and heat, she became this little piece of sweetness in my life that was something that was really at the end of the day after working in 125 degree heat and working around ammunitions and all of these other men, I would come back and find her curled up on my cot. And it was, for me, a little sense of sweetness, a little brightness. It was almost as if God kind of said, hey, this is a little creature that you need to look for. You need to care after. And it was just a little bright spot that she brought every day, I think, to not only me, but really everybody in the tent.
Did your peers in the tent, did they help hide her?
Well, it was interesting because at first everybody was on board and we took her back to the tent and got her kind of all cleaned up. And so that the very first night I put her in a box with a little towel and just thought, hey, you know, I made her a litter box. I had no experiences with cats whatsoever, but somebody suggested, hey, let's create a litter box. So I made her a litter box. She immediately went to the bathroom in a litter box, which I thought was this, hey, she's the smartest creature I've ever met. Right. You know, I didn't realize that was pure instinct. But that evening I put her in a box and she went to sleep. It was just like having a little baby. And I thought, oh, this is great. Until about 2 o'clock in the morning, she decided to wake up and did a Helen Reddy, I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar rendition, screaming at the top of her lungs. And our lieutenant, who was in the bunk directly across from me, suggested very forcefully, Beyer, get that cat out of this tent. So I tipped the box over and she ran out and skidded out of the tent. That was the end of my great cat experiment, I thought anyway. But until the next morning, I woke up and I felt something tickling the top of my head. And I thought one of the guys was messing with me. So I reached up to slap their hand away and I grabbed a handful of fur.
Oh.
And then what I realized is she had gone out in the middle of the night and somewhere during the evening came back, took up residence on my pillow and was now licking the top of my head. So in 2 days, this little kitten had found me twice. And it was at that point that I realized, you know, she's not a tent mascot. She belongs to me at this point. And that's when I realized, hey, I've got this other life that I need to look after, I need to take care of.
Well, thank you for sharing that. When you brought Salopi back to the U.S., you had to go through, I mean, you were on, I think it was what, 2 or 3 flights, and you had to sneak her in, but it all seemed to work. Was that like another sign?
Well, and that's the biggest, the first one is to get her out of Turkey, because after, you know, after 3 months of really hiding her from everybody else in the camp, at one point the military police came through because there were stray dogs in the area that people were making pets. And the military police came through and said, we have to exterminate all the pets or all these animals for fear of rabies. So I had to hide her from the military police. And then it was time to leave the deployment. And I'm thinking, I can't leave her behind. You know, I've been feeding her this long. She's going to starve to death. So at 19, 20 years old, I figured I have to get her out of the country. But how do you sneak a kitten out of the country of Turkey? And we had to go through inspections and looking at our person. So I had to secret her out of Turkey until I got her back to our unit in Berlin. And then I had to hide her from the rest of the unit in Berlin. And then it finally came time to bring her home to Pennsylvania, back to the Philadelphia area, at which point that was the next big thing. My mother, who is a voracious cleaner and a neat freak and really had no pets growing up to speak of, I had to convince her, hey, can I bring this cat home? Well, of course, she couldn't picture what a Turkish cat looked like. I think she thought I was bringing home a Bengal tiger or something like that. So I basically had to bring this little tiny kitten across continents till I could finally bring her back to my family home in the Philadelphia area.
I think it's a miracle you made it back with her.
You know, Michelle, it's funny. My wife and my mother-in-law and my son and I just flew down to Florida a couple weeks ago, and we took our dog, who's a little lap dog. I was stressing out with her on the flight. My wife said, how did you ever do this with Salopi? And I really think, and we had paid for a seat for the dog. I really think it was just kind of divine intervention that, you know, God brought Salopi into my life and she changed my life. I changed her life, and the rest is history.
Yep, I think you're right. Okay, so we're not going to give away all of the story, but at one point, once you're home and you're at your parents, out of your commitment for the service, you went to school, things change. And at one point you decided to make the decision to leave Salopi, like let her stay where she was rather than move with her.
Well, and that actually wasn't my decision. That was my mother's. And it's interesting because she was very hesitant to have a pet and very hesitant to have this Bengal tiger that she thought I was bringing home. But it came time to move on to my life and start my professional career, which required me to move out of state. And so I went and I mentioned to my mother, hey, I've got this new job opportunity in the Detroit area. And she said, well, what are you going to do with Salopi? And I said, well, she's mine. She's going to come with me. And she said, well, is that really fair to her? You're going to be working odd hours. She's going to be home alone a lot. And wouldn't it make more sense to leave her here? And that's when I realized that this neat freak with obsessive compulsive tendencies who always wanted her house spotlessly clean kind of had fallen in love with this cat just as much as I did. And while she was happy for me and willing to let her son go, at that point, she really wasn't willing to let her grandkitten go. So I left Salopi behind with my parents, and at that point, she became their cat.
So do you think that when we make these decisions, it's not always the easiest to do, but sometimes you have to come to the decision of what's right for my fur kid? You know, what's the right thing for them? Whether it's either relocating or deciding to adopt and thinking about if you're going to change your lifestyle or not, or can you?
Absolutely. I think it comes to the point, well, just like regular kids, whether they have fur or not, right? Sometimes you have to make decisions not based on what you want, but based on what's best for them. And at that point, I realized that she had become so attached to my mother. She especially became attached to my father, who was just always just an animal lover and a sweet human being. And yeah, like I said, they were happy for my ability to move on with my life. They just weren't quite ready to give her up yet. And they didn't. I think it was the right decision for both Salopi and my parents.
I think you're right. What about for you?
That there was guilt feelings about that forever. But sometimes the love you have for other people and for other creatures sometimes supplant what you might feel about yourself. So difficult, and I wrote in the book, that was a difficult situation as I backed out of my driveway for the last time and saw her sitting in the window looking at me. And that was a very emotional time in the book, very emotional time in my life. Here I am turning this page, and I'm really leaving kind of the sweetest bookmark of that page behind me. So
I think that was very thoughtful of you.
Thank you. Not easy, but thank you.
You know, thought about your parents, you thought about your cat Salopi. They were, you know, with her all the time. I do believe when you adopt, you know, your fur babes can acclimate to your lifestyle. My first adoption was two dogs at different times. And I was working, but I had, you know, at times I had a pet sitter come during the day, or I readjusted my lifestyle. Sometimes you have to do that. But then there's also the other side of coin where your lifestyle is not going to work. And maybe there's a better place for this fur babe.
Well, it's sacrifice, right?
Sacrifice, exactly. Either way.
Well, and as you can see in the book and as you hear in the book and it comes out of the pages at you.
Yeah.
There's not a doubt in my mind that she knew she was being rescued and saved and being given a better life. And she did everything she could to make sure I stayed safe and getting her out of the country and back home, that it was kind of a no-brainer as far as doing what was right for her when it was my time to sacrifice.
What is your opinion on this? Because when you adopted Salopi, it wasn't optimal time. It was difficult. It was, I mean, you're in the service and then you have to, as you said, go through, you know, over a continent to bring this little kitten back. So it wasn't optimal time. And sometimes, you know, us as humans, we never really have an optimal time in our life when we're considering, you know, should I adopt a cat? Should I not? Is it a good time? And by the way, two is always better than one. They keep each other company. So two cats, adopt two at one time, it's much better. So, but what do you say to those that say, well, it might not be a right time. I don't know. It could be difficult, because I have my opinion on that, of course. But what do you think?
You know, I would agree with you. And I don't care if it's a cat, a dog, a child. If you wait for the perfect time for anything in life, you're going to constantly be left waiting. And I think the joy and the love that you miss out on, I always like to say, life is what happens while you're busy making plans. And sometimes there's never going to be a right time to do anything. But certainly when it comes to bringing love into your home in the form of a pet, sometimes there's always that leap of faith. And I certainly did it with Salopi, and it sounds like you've done it with your cats and then your dogs in the past. Their ability to worm their way into your heart is crystal clear in reading my book, but it's crystal clear for anybody who's had a pet before. And if you just wait for that perfect time, I don't think you're ever going to get there. I think love always takes a leap of faith.
I think you're absolutely right, because when I moved across the country and I was deciding, should I adopt or should I not adopt, it took me a while, and I actually worked for a year and thought, let me think about this, because I work a lot. Is it fair? And I finally decided, you know what? I'm doing this because I'll make my life work. I'll make it work. And one of my best decisions. So my dogs I adopted. My cats all adopted me. So that's, you could just, I'm in South Florida, so it's warm here just about all the year, except if we get this lone cold fronts. So cats are always around, especially kittens. So I could have been adopted by probably 11.
Right.
And I've had five at one time.
They do find you, that's for sure. My own certainly testament to that.
They find you, especially during kitten season. They find you.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, I would like to mention that you did not let your fear of college stop you.
I did not. That changes something about the military and laying in the forest and getting rained on and snowed on and, you know, toxic or CS gas thrown at you. And you become real quick. Yeah, I think I'm ready for college now. So that's a great way of finding what you desire in life.
Can you share your degrees? Because I thought it was incredible, from having a fear of college to I should call you doctor.
Yeah, that's for this young kid from Norristown who had no interest and was terribly afraid of going to college. And it ended up, you know, I ended up with a bachelor's degree, two master's degrees and a PhD. So that's kind of one of those things. You never say never. And I think that gets to that part of resilience in the book of, you know, even when things are difficult, you just keep pushing through and you just keep trying to succeed one step at a time. And literally, you just never say never.
I was going to ask you about resilience and defining it, but you pretty much said it. Never say never. I mean, persevere. I think we all have challenges thrown at us, whether, you know, we grow up with certain situations or whether we have physical limits or financial limits or, you know, there's a lot of kinds of limits. But the big thing is to just persevere, just do it.
Michelle, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And you know, I have one of my sons is in college right now. And I think many things we've done wrong in our society is trying to take that fear of failure or trying to take difficulty away from our children. Because really, ultimately in life, whether you're successful or not depends on whether you just keep going. And I keep telling my current college student is, you know, it may not be fun, but life isn't always fun. But the difference between people who succeed and don't is the ones who just keep going and not stopping are the ones that ultimately succeed.
Exactly. And how many times have you heard that it's okay to fail, just don't do it the same thing more than once?
For sure. That's a great way of putting it. Yes. I'll be using that from now on.
I don't know where I heard that, but or no, you know what it is? It's okay to make mistakes. Just don't make the same mistake twice. Same thing with failure. I mean, that's a mistake, right?
And you're going to fail. And what you have to realize is you just keep going. So
you have to keep going. I agree with you. I love your book. It's Salopi, A Story of Love and Resilience. And the name, actually, if you're doing an author search, Bradford J. Beyer. Brad, where can people find your book?
You can find it on anywhere you get books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Goodreads, things like that.
I know I'm doing it again, but I have so much respect for our service people. So thank you again for our service. Thank you for coming on Catitude. I so appreciate it. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It's been a great honor. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. I hope you all enjoyed this book. Again, it's called Salopi. It's a true story of love and resilience by Bradford Beyer. It's really a wonderful book. I couldn't put it down. I loved it. I want to thank Brad Beyer for coming on Catitude and sharing his story. Thank you so much. I want to thank my cat crew, Dennis, Charlotte, and Molly, who taught me what it is to love a cat. So thank you. And of course, a huge thank you to my producer, Mark Winter, for working his magic on my show and making it sound amazing for everybody listening. And a huge, huge thank you to my listening audience. Thank you so much for listening to Catitude. I so appreciate it. And hey, remember, lose the attitude, have catitude.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.